I can think of quite a few individuals that are so easy to coerce within your, both of you's, immediate sphere of influence that it would be good practice to use that coercive ability to benefit not just yourselves, but them in their advancement of awareness. Just using mental, not saying, but using mental coercion.
Because young people don't have that strong will established until they get a little bit more education.
Well, I'm not saying just young people. I'm saying that there is a wide spectrum of people within your immediate sphere of influence that would be useful tools for you to learn how to use that coercive ability, even vocally in Skip's case and mentally in your case, Russ.
Well, I have an uncanny knack of being able to talk my way into or out of just about anything in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I've always had that.
Mm-hmm. That's because you know how to use voice coercion in a way that is very beneficial.
Never thought about it as coercion.
If you look at the term coercion, it means to control something by your will. Okay, so controlling somebody by your will, by using your voice, is...
Yep. Yeah, got you.
And using your mind to do the same thing is...
Yep.
Okay. No, Skip, I'm not going to tell you how to build a warp core engine. Ask me to do that.
I love you, darling. Thank you.
Thank you. I love you too, sweetie pie. Okay. Okay. I'm back.
Hey, darling.
Hey. Okay, what we're doing is we're trying to fill in here a little bit as we are short on all at this time.
Was he supposed to show up tonight?
Yes.
Oh, that's what I thought. I didn't think he'd say he was taking off the week.
No, I didn't think so.
He was doing the nap last time,
which
we understood.
Mm-hmm. You should be here, but I'm not alarmed. He will show up.
No, don't worry about it. Biggie, we'll fill some time.
No big thing.
We have 45 minutes we can kill.
Yeah, there you go.
Go ahead, you start the ball rolling, darling. We'll just follow right along.
No, I'm hoping that he will show up.
Well, if he does, he does. If he don't, he doesn't. We'll be disappointed, but
I say this is fake, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so let's see, as we're filling in here,
always have to be a ring mistress in these situations.
I'm not the ring mistress. A real ring mistress should pack up.
Oh, I know, but I thought you were just kind of back for fun.
Okay, let's see. What can we discuss?
Well, we can discuss the your diplomatic fun games you have coming up here. Or we can go on to more dietary supplemental things.
Or if you want to go on to the spiritual healing bit, you can go that way too.
Okay, that works.
Okay.
Physical, mental healing, spiritual healing. Okay, now, what have we got so far? We have using water to cleanse your hands.
Mm-hmm.
We have using energy balls. Mm-hmm. We have using rituals.
Mm-hmm.
We cover rituals?
Yeah. A little.
Okay.
Maybe I wasn't present when you covered them thoroughly. Mm-hmm.
But we can cover them again. It's always handy to go over rituals. Now, part of the human purpose of a ritual is to awaken the conscious spiritual side of an individual and also to bring the two energy patterns into alignment where they can work together. Sometimes it's necessary for a healer to go down, but sometimes a healer can't go down that far. So the healer will go down as far as they can and bring the other person up to a spiritual level that is close enough for the healer to work from. Now, depending on what religious beliefs the individual is, depends on what religious practices the healer will use in a ritualized ceremonial healing. And let's say you are a Native American. Okay, what you would do is to bring somebody up or down to your spiritual level, depending on their level or their energy level, is that you would sit with them within a very hot area, which is part of the spiritual, you would call it, I believe, a heat house?
Sweat lodge.
Sweat lodge. And in doing so, what you're doing is you are bringing them up or down to your level, as well as you moving up or down to their level. That is part of the religious practice that aids in the ceremonial and ritualized healing. Now, once you have achieved that level, then you can start to do the healing process of the energy transference, which in actual fact what you're doing is you're guiding their energy and augmenting it with your energy into a healing platform that they can use. Whether it is more your energy than their energy is besides the point. What you're doing is you're getting them to focus the energy and do the work themselves. A lot of healing rituals are designed to do just that, is that even though we have an unlimited supply of energy to work with, it is limited by several factors. One is our stamina. One is their stamina. One is the mental condition that you're in. One is the mental condition that they're in. One is the actual health that they're in. These are just five factors that have to be considered when doing a ritualized healing. Also part of some rituals is fasting or taking psychedelic drugs to aid in bringing the mental awareness up or down so that they can mesh with you. Now, these rituals are very important to some people. Even in modern surgical facilities, it's very ritualized. Scalpel, forceps, autoclave, sutra, needle, forceps, swab. It's all very, very ritualized in how things are done. And for a reason. Because even though the subject is unconscious, the energy is being aided and flown through the ritual. Forceps, scalpel, sutra, clamp, irrigate, swab. All these are part of the ritual. Even in a modern setting with the lighting and the sterilized table and the sterilized equipment and so on. So the ritual, even if you think it's not practice anymore, actually is. If you take into consideration such other practices as listening to classical music whilst they're doing the procedure, or the favorite tunes of the subject that is in healing, or bringing them gifts of flowers and sitting and talking with them, that's all ritualized if you look at how things happen. Okay. Well, all don't ask a question all at once. It's overwhelming.
Yes, I realize it is. I'm just observing and dissolving what you've said.
Well, I'm working on how to change that downstairs into a more energy center. Now that that's, you know, all pretty much what it can be used for, what it will be used for. So to aid in healing, let's say, or to aid in meditation.
And to
use your ritual, like you're talking about, how to set that up.
Can I intervene here just a minute?
Certainly.
Okay. I was going to a lady that's a graduate from Barbara, physical, spiritual, healing graduate. The room that she had set up had a table in it, her desk, a radio, the disc player actually is what it was, and two open windows.
Okay.
Nothing more to distract you, but nothing less to distract you. In other words, it was comfortable. And she played soft music while all this was going on.
Mm-hmm.
No vocal music, all instrumental.
Mm-hmm.
It was very relaxing. And she went through her own physical ritual of hands-on healing, which she went the same route every time that you understand what I'm saying.
Huh? Yes.
Because that's the way she was trained,
mm-hmm.
and it's part of her ritual.
Exactly. But the problem that Russ has brought up is, what do you want the room for?
Right. It's a multi-purpose room.
That's right. So you've got the problem.
Right.
For healing, you want a bright, light, airy facility. For meditation, you want it fairly dark. You want it comfortable. You want it warm. So therefore you've got the conflicting structures, but I think we can work with that. One of the important things is the energy flow. All things require good energy flow, good being the operative word. What you might think about doing is moving exercise equipment out of that area and putting it somewhere where it is. Because what you're doing is you're creating a different kind of energy that is not that compatible with it.
A distraction.
Correct. But what I'm saying, getting back to the energy flow, it is important to have the correct energy flow. It's not a storage area for clothing. It is not a storage area for knickknacks. It is what you want it to be, is a healing, meditation, metaphysical area. Correct.
Right.
So that's something that has to be laid out.
Right, so we actually have to design it.
Correct. And then once it is being used for that purpose, that is a purpose it is used for. It is not a storage area.
Right.
It is not an area to come down, sit down, and just be idle. It is an area that you go to do your meditation, to do your healing, to do your research on astral travel, to do your various techniques and practices.
I see.
But it is not an area for storage. I know I'm harping on that.
No, you're right,
Yeah. So having an exercise equipment in there is also a distraction.
Well, I can get that out of there, that's easy.
Yeah, having a setup that is beneficial for mental awareness and advancement is what you want. So what you might try to do, and here's an idea, is the little window, not the sliding glass
right.
one, is get one of those curtains that comes in a circle that you can draw open and close. Something like that would be perfect, because you can do your healing with beautiful light streaming in through the windows. Actually, that's a little bit tricky, that window. It will give it more lighting.
And then do your meditation by closing the blind.
Mm-hmm. Another thing to do would be to specifically designate that as your domain.
Right. Well, I said that the other day.
Yes, I know. And it is totally your domain. Coming and going to pick up the laundry is fine, but it is your domain, your private space.
Okay.
You need that.
Yeah, I know. I'm just trying to arrange things now. Well, getting the exercise equipment out will help a lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Won't be a clothes hanger anymore.
Exactly. Okay, talking of that, the motivation techniques that we've used are working well.
Mm-hmm.
Not as well as I anticipated.
Darling, I've got a question for you.
Sure.
You have met.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She told me something the other day that just kind of floored me.
Mm-hmm.
She has the ability to see inside of another person's body.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to heal it.
But what's she doing with it?
Well, it overwhelmed her so much because it's the first time she's ever used it that mm-hmm. way. It scared the living shit out of her, let's mm-hmm. face it.
Well, also, from what Kiri's telling me, she's getting a little dark as well.
She's what now?
Getting a little dark. I don't mean bad. I mean she's getting a little dark in her moods.
Yeah.
She needs to be brought out of that before it starts to reverse all the work that's been done on her.
Okay. All right.
Both by your doctors and by yourself.
Okay. Yeah. Because she can't get up here. She's working now in mm-hmm. a job where she has to be on it.
Mm-hmm.
Graveyard shift.
Ah. That might be part of the reason why she's getting dark moody.
It could be. It could be.
But what you should do is, you know, suggest that she goes out with her friend and relaxes and has a girl's night.
Yeah, because she doesn't have a girlfriend per se.
Well, she needs to get in contact with her friend.
She needs somebody.
Yeah, she really needs a good friend to go out and have some fun with.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, darling.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but what you can do is that when she comes over, you can make bright, cheerful situations for her.
Mm-hmm.
And tell her that, yeah, being able to see areas that need healing, seeing within the body, is something that, yeah, is a part of her, that she needs to become accustomed to controlling and
mm-hmm.
seeing.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I am smiling is guess who's just showed up? Okay, greetings and felicitations. I apologize for being delayed. There were certain key matters that needed my attention.
You're a busy man. We don't mind.
Thank you. Ooh. Okay, well, let us get down to business. How much time do we have left?
I'll have a tip.
Okay, let us get through these things as quickly as possible, as I do have to return to deal with the situation.
Oh, okay, no problem.
Go.
Okay, ask your questions.
Oh, I brought that piece of paper.
Ah, okay, let us...
Go ahead, Russ.
Okay, this is dealing with a incident that happened in... doesn't say. Another unusual crystal find bears directly upon the use of crystals as the generator of a universal form of power. In 1970, Dr. Ray Brown, a naturopathic practitioner from Mesa, Arizona, was scuba diving with friends near the Berry Islands, Bahamas, in an area 20 miles from the edge of the submarine drop-off called the Tongue of the Ocean. During the dive, Brown became separated from his companions, and in trying to rejoin them, suddenly saw a strange pyramid shape looming up against the aquamarine light. The pyramid was situated 22 fathoms down and stood 120 feet high, with only 90 feet projecting out of the seafloor, shifting sands. Brown was first struck at how smooth and mirror-like the stone surface on the structure was, with joints between the individual blocks almost indiscernible. Swimming about the capstone, which the Arizona diver thought looks like lapis lazuli, he discovered an entranceway and decided to explore further. Passing along a narrow hallway, Brown finally came to a small rectangular room with a pyramid-shaped ceiling. What was amazing was that the room contained no algae or coral growing on the inner walls. They were completely spotless. In addition, though Brown had brought no flashlight, he could see, nevertheless, everything in the room perfectly. It was very bright and well lit, but with no direct light source was visible. Brown's attention was drawn to a brassy metallic rod, 3 inches diameter, hanging from the apex of the center, and at its end was attached a many-faceted red gem, which came to a point. Directly below the rod and gem, sitting in the middle of the room, was a stand of carved stone topped by a stone plate with scrolled ends. On the plate rested a pair of carved metal bronze-colored hands, life-size, which appeared to be blackened and burned. as if having been subjected to tremendous heat. Nestled in the hands and situated 4 feet directly below the ceiling, broad gem point was a crystal sphere 3.5 inches in diameter. Brown first attempted to pry loose the ceiling rod and red gemstone, but neither would budge. Turning back to the crystal sphere, he found it easily separated from the bronze handholder and left the pyramid with it. As he departed, Brown found the presence and heard a voice from somewhere telling him never to return. Fearing that his unusual prize might be confiscated as salvage treasure by the U.S. government, Brown did not disclose the existence of the strange crystal or experience until 1975, when he exhibited the crystal for the first time. He displayed the crystal only a half dozen times, but each time witnesses have seen or been sensitive to strange phenomena directly associated with it. Deep within the crystal form, one gazes upon three pyramidal images, one in front of the other, in decreasing sizes. Some entering into a meditative or alpha brainwave state of consciousness are able to clearly see a fourth pyramid in the foreground of the other three. It's about the Hall of Records in Giza, and the position of the three images, and hold the key to finding the fourth.
What was the fathom depth?
I think it was 22, if I remember right. 22 fathoms down.
22 fathoms down, and
6 feet of fathom. The book's at 120.
He is lying.
Oh, really?
Below 100 feet, you need to change the mixture, or deeper than 100 feet, you have to change the mixture of the oxygen regulator. If he is not using the correct mixture, then he is dicing with death.
Interesting.
70 feet is the normal safety limit for divers with unregulated tanks. The deeper you go, the more pressure there is. So therefore, this is not strictly accurate. If the report is indicating, as it is, that he was at 22 fathoms, then he is in the danger area, and if he did go into the temple, first of all, I would assume that he would have realized the significance of the find and not disturbed it, but having been once told never to return. Taking an object from somewhere such as that, and as you stated, he was a natural healing practitioner, he would understand that what he would be doing is desecrating something of great importance. So this sounds more like somebody has taken a partial truth and has altered it and has not checked their facts.
It's 132 feet is how deep that was.
Then he is well into the danger zone.
Way past the safety.
Almost twice as bad.
Because 80 feet is just the limit. No safety at all. That is the limit.
That is correct. He is past the safety limit.
Yep.
If he came straight back to the surface without decompressing,
he'd die.
Correct.
Because the nitrogen in his blood would turn to bubbles and have to kill him. You have to be decompressed when you go that deep. It takes about 3 hours to come back up.
From that deep? No, I always thought 120 feet wasn't that far.
Yeah, it is. When you're breathing oxygen, or air, excuse me, not oxygen, air, they have to mix nitrogen in with it to be able to breathe that deep.
Mm.
And still, they have to come up and decompress.
Yeah, and then they have to keep changing lighter form, lighter mixture tanks, and stay at a certain level so that the nitrogen dissolves in the blood and don't make bubbles to stop the heart.
And the brain. Nitrogen entering the brain is worse than the aneurysm. What happens is when you come to the surface is your body bends and thrashes around, hence the nickname of...
The bends. Rapture of the deep is another name for it.
Yes.
And that's when you start seeing things when you go down below the safety zone.
Which is quite possible what may have occurred in this case.
Rapture of the deep. It's like getting hallucinations is exactly what it is on account of the nitrogen in the blood.
However, that does not explain the crystal sphere.
That's right.
The crystal sphere could be a old sphere that fell into the hands of the individual and is being used with the story to enhance its reputation.
Hmm.
But to go that depth, this is a fictitious story with smatterings of truths and half-truths added in.
Could be. Could have grown over a period of time that it was deeper than it actually was.
That is another possibility.
But still, you are asking, you know, people are asking a lot to believe in. And
exactly.
I mean, that's stretching it. Well, just because if we look at Atlantis and we look at what the cataclysm that went through it, how do you get an intact pyramid sitting there after what it went through? I mean, even if it's settled.
It's possible.
I suppose.
I'm not saying it's impossible, okay?
Yeah.
You see what you are being asked to believe. There's a lot of subjection, supposition, information, and it is a little too detailed.
Sounds like a legend rather than a...
Correct.
You understand
what I'm saying? I have no way to find the guy in any kind of searches except for that little piece that I just read you.
Sounds like a legend.
I can't find him anywhere.
And a legend is always 90% untrue.
Well, you would think it would be a big archaeological search after something like this came to life. And this is 75 when he finally revealed it. Well, that's 20 years ago. In 20 years, no one's found it?
In the 5 years gap between him finding it and actually announcing it.
So his mind, it could have grown also.
Right. How about the guy who took him out diving? He knew where the guy was diving around.
Correct.
I mean, do a little...
In 1970?
1975? Or 1970, yeah, right.
1970?
Almost 30 years.
He would be able to locate approximately where he was from his charts and possibly the feelings of the water and so on.
Well, here's another thing, too. It all depends on whether it was a scientific dive or it was a recreational dive. If it was recreational, the man has no idea where he took him. He just took him out to dive. Because they don't mark it. In other words, they don't keep accurate records of recreational dives. They would if it was a scientific dive. They know exactly where he was going.
That's quite right. You are bringing up some very good points.
Right. But see, this is all going on the fact that, you know, many people have always said that there's pyramids there that are causing the Bermuda Triangle disturbances. And, you know, there's these big crystals that are affecting planes and navigational things. Because,
you know, that's another big, in my estimation, folks. And the reason why I say this is because I believe that there's a magnetic field there that spins people's compasses and everything else. And they wander off by not being able to know where they're at.
A lot of what is in that area is credited to supernatural phenomena. As Skip has correctly pointed out, a lot of it is stupidity, regardless of what is there. A lot of what happens is because of stupidity and superstition that they believe and they assume that that area is caused by what is there. Even if there is nothing there, which I'm not going to confirm or deny.
No, that's understandable. But the biggest thing that I see, and almost every instance... of the reports that I've heard, including the aircraft that disappeared in that area, the training aircraft, Army aircraft, their compasses went off.
Correct.
Right away, they start panicking. Instead of flying in a straight line, and they can see if they're flying in a straight line, the same with the ship, they know if they're turning the rudder one way or the other.
Right.
They panic and start running around in circles. Because their compass and their instruments go off?
Correct. Skip is very correct in what he is saying.
So there's a natural phenomenon, or there might be an unnatural phenomenon, but either way,
I say it's a natural phenomenon to Most part, okay.
Regardless of what the phenomena is, Skip is very correct in saying that it is stupidity that is causing a lot of these missing or disappeared or whatever objects.
Okay.
Regardless of what is being there. Okay, my time is, as I said, limited.
No, I'm sorry.
Ask a few more questions and then I must ask one more.
Actually, that's it for me.
That's it for me too. Go ahead. Okay. Go ahead. Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Prosper, and I'll be back.
Farewell. Thank you. A lot of it is stupid.
Yeah, see, I won't know until actually, if I go there someday, I actually feel it myself. Yeah. Then I'll make a decision.
Yes, darling.
Carry on. I'm listening.
From what I understand, now, there's no feeling of what's happening to these people from all the reports I've ever heard about it. It's all the mechanical... What's the matter, Sweetheart?
I'm just looking around.
All the mechanical instrumentation that's on board, whether it be a ship, a plane, or whatever it is, go wacky, including the radios. Now,
as an engineer,
we're talking what?
As an engineer, I can explain that.
Go ahead, darling.
Okay, what has been given off is an electrical magnetic field.
Well, that's what I was trying to get at is a natural magnetic. Vortex?
Not possible. It's often magnetic, natural vortex that big that can affect.
Why things. Not?
Because you have to have some kind of cause to make the effect.
Okay.
So give me a cause and I'll tell you that that's possible to affect.
All right. Stop and think of how a North and South Pole works.
Right.
Okay. It goes...
Earth's a giant magnet.
The Earth is.
Yeah.
But it goes to a bell between them, doesn't it? Where there's nothing. It's two balls. And they go to nothing exactly between them.
Okay.
There's no magnets.
I don't know. I've never studied it. Actually.
Okay. So. Magnetism, you've got a positive and a negative on this pole.
All right.
You've got an earth around it. But the magnetism itself does not go around the earth. It goes like a ball to the center. The center is no magnetism whatsoever. There's no north, there's no south. It's a neutral point. Mm-hmm. That neutral point is damn near at the Bermuda Triangle.
Hmm. Well, wouldn't that cover the whole Earth then?
No. It would not come out on the whole Earth. It would come out at one point. Because that's the way North and South works. It comes down to a neutral, and that neutral has to go someplace.
I don't get it. If North is up here, South is here, then it comes to a ball together.
No, it comes to two balls together. It's hard to explain unless... Because you can take an instrumentation and go from on a magnetic rod, okay, and use... multimeter with mega ohms, you know, really, really fine. And you can go the rod. And when you hit the center of the rod, there's nothing. When you go the other way, it goes back, the needle swings back the other way.
Hmm. All right, so it's in a neutral spot.
There is a neutral spot.
Wouldn't there be a corresponding one on the other side of the earth then? In one spot?
Theoretically, I would say yes.
Theoretically, you're probably correct.
So can we look for unusual events, like maybe Amelia Earhart disappearing or something like that?
No, that's in the Pacific. That isn't right. Exactly the opposite of the Bermuda Triangle. Oh. Exactly the opposite of the Bermuda Triangle would be on Earth.
It'd be in Asia.
It'd be in Asia. So where does all your monks go and lamas?
So Tibet, you're thinking, is on the other side?
Yes, I'm almost certain of it.
I'll look on my globe.
But I think it's almost directly straight across the Earth from the Bermuda Triangle.
Mm-hmm. I'm very much inclined to agree.
And this is where all your monks and lamas and everything else go to get their education and meditate and study and everything else.
Interesting. That would be a very fascinating subject.
And nobody has ever come up with it before, Russ.
No, I'm just nobody would ever think of that being two neutral spots on the Earth because the magnetic
it would be pole. Straight through. It'd be like a T through your north and south pole. Okay. That would be your neutral that would be coming out on the surface of the Earth.
So, if that's the case on your planet, okay, let's extrapolate and analyze here for a second. If you have two spots opposite each other that is a natural vortex, one on land and one on sea, now the water would affect it in a way that would cause massive magnetic disturbances, the other one being up high and an area seldom flown over and navigational instruments not being used that much in that area, would not notice the effects as much as a lowland area that's traveled over and through frequently. So the recorded incidences of missing or strange occurrences would be higher in an area where it is more densely traveled and populated than a sparsely less traveled area. So the thing to do would be to look at the strange occurrences of monks levitating, higher astral travel capabilities,
telepathy,
creativity, coercion,
ESP.
Would be correspondingly high to the quantity of missing or strange occurrences on the opposite location.
Mm-hmm.
If the location was high and on dry land, I think the same sort of effects would be occurring. But because it is not a habitated area, but a traveled area, as opposed to the other one not being as densely traveled, then the events would be equally proportionate in both areas.
In other words, you've got a positive and negative.
Not necessarily positive or negative. They can
not,
be both
not,
po-
not positive. In electricity, honey.
No.
Not in electricity. I'm talking about in...
The electric magnetic field.
No.
No?
No, in life itself.
Oh, correct.
Wouldn't compasses go kind of nuts in Tibet then too?
They might just do that, but like she says, it isn't a traveled area that much, and they don't even fly over it.
I mean,
they
if you just have a compass in your hand,
well,
and you're walking around in Tibet.
Yeah, it would probably go ape shit on you.
I think so.
Yeah.
So we have records of that, possibly.
Possibly, yes.
We probably do, but nobody has ever pursued it, per se.
Because they probably come up with an explanation that would go something like this. There is a high mineral deposit in that area which should be investigated for mining. Or a possible meteor strike if it's in a cratered area of a natural crater type arrangement.
Yeah, but we're looking for specific,
yeah, there you go.
Events related to compasses. So therefore,
or instrumentation.
We would ignore such simple explanations.
Or instrumentation of any
planes
mm-hmm.
or whatever.
Magnetic origin.
I'm explaining a lot of the...
Actually, there may be a way of finding out if there's anything strange going on in that area. Here's
you, mean
a way
you mean I've opened up a can of peas?
No, that there's a way of finding out if there is a higher incident than normal of aeroplane crashes in that area that can be attributed to malfunctioning navigational equipment.
There you go.
I've got a way of finding out.
Good.
So do you.
Of course.
Good.
Correct. And this is a clue. Look for the Second World War, the hump.
Okay.
The hump.
Cool. Would you let us know, darling?
No, I've got it accessing right now.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Maybe I did open up something.
Oh, you did. You opened up a can of worms in a very good area, something that both of you can do research on.
Now, here's another question for you. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't this be not a unique phenomenon to Earth, but on other planets as well?
And we're dealing with Earth, not other planets.
Why not?
That's a question I'm wondering.
If it works here, why can't it work everywhere?
Why does Mars have something like that? And if that was true, would possibly be those pyramids on Mars be someplace that might be a good explanation for a vortex there? Absolutely.
And the face?
And the face. Two faces.
Yeah. So,
you'd have to look on the other side of Mars from that direct point to find the other
vortex.
Vortex, which would be interesting to see what's on that side.
Yeah.
Interesting. Carrie, what's your feeling on the matter?
Feelings? I don't have feelings.
Yeah, right.
Not on those matters, anyway.
Anyhow,
mm-hmm.
that's a good one to open up.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. We're almost at the end there, aren't we?
Yeah, I think so.
Now, wait a minute. Here's another point for you to consider. Why would anybody want to set up a very large civilization on a continent with crustal instabilities? Unless you had perhaps something that would be attracting you to put a civilization there.
Or a colony there.
Or a colony there.
Okay, that brings up some very good points now. Okay. Let's give you another little project. One that's going to be for a month. Okay? I want you to plan the colonization of your planet. Where would be the ideal place now to colonize? Now, remember, it's got to have a good food supply, good climate, good mineral supply, safe environment, stability. It's got to be situated somewhere where the growing season is going to be long enough, but there's got to be enough precipitation to aid in the growing process. What I want you guys to do is to write out a full, or not a full, write out, but make a full explanation on an area that you would colonize. On a barren, not on a barren planet, on a planet that is your planet, and there's nobody on your planet.
Oh, it would be a colony.
Let's say,
give me a number of people I can work with.
Let's say 10,000 people.
10,000. Okay.
Enough of a logistical problem to give you some headaches. You've got to find a location that would be ideally suited for a colony. You've got to take everything into consideration: climate, land. Weather, food supply, water supply, mineral supply, agricultural supply, accessibility, inaccessibility, defense, everything.
Well, is there other tribes out there trying to take you over or something?
No. It's a colonization of a planet. Anything external?